There is hope for democracy. The Supreme Court ruled 9-0 that these deranged blue state bureaucrats cannot remove Donald Trump from the ballot. Looks like one cheating tool has been stripped away from the Democrats. I guess y'all just have to do your best to beat him fair and square, huh? Good luck. But speaking of, nearly every national poll shows Donald Trump ahead of Joe Biden. And while that's great and exciting, I will once again caution my fellow Trump supporters from getting too cocky, and I'll tell you why. Plus, some say we are in a cold war with China, but Peter Schweizer, author of the new book Blood Money, says the war is not only hot, but the body count is one-sided and hint, hint, the U.S. ain't winning it. But Peter joins me tonight. Last but not least, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis took aim at DEI, and when DeSantis shoots, he doesn't miss. I have some final thoughts. The show starts now. There is some hope left that our country hasn't devolved into a total and complete banana republic. The Supreme Court ruled 9-0 that Colorado cannot keep Trump off the ballot. And some folks, well, they aren't too happy.
Well, sometimes it was. Yeah. But, you know, when it was all men voting for all men, we ended up with the Grand Wizard. You know, we ended up with all kinds of people on the bench.
We did.
Now, they all evolved, I will say, most of them evolved and became really interesting jurists. But I have always known that there was that possibility. And what I grew up watching, I watched when the first women were getting in. Yeah. I watched when women were breaking those ceilings. And now I'm watching people shut those ceilings down, as well as removing history.
Oh, cry me a river, Whoopi. You're so full of it, it actually hurts. And to think some people actually watch The View. But other than that, this is a great day for our country, our republic, and for all the Americans out there that just quite frankly give a damn about what's right. Now, this doesn't by any means mean that we've got this thing in the bag. This is a small victory, and we've got many, many battles ahead, the main one being, I theorize, Gavin Newsom. But you know the end is nearing for Joe when even the liberal mainstream media and quasi-funny entertainment programs start taking swings at the well-meaning elderly man with a poor memory. Saturday Night Live took a swipe at Joe and his administration's assurance he's a real firecracker behind closed doors. And Bill Maher, the unlikely yet increasingly loud voice of reason, also landed a shady punch with this monologue encouraging Joe to embrace his senility and be himself, old.
Stop with the I'm sharper than ever. Nobody's buying that. Don't try to deny the age thing. And just admit it. Say, yes, I'm bad with names. And I walk like a toddler with a full diaper.
And I agree. Just embrace it, Joe. You're not going to be the nominee anyway. Which brings me to my next point here, the polls. 33 national polls now show Trump leading Biden, if even by a little. And that's good news because a lot of these polls centered around policy positions and presidencies rather than simply the presidents themselves. Americans had more money and more security under Donald Trump, and they are reminded of that every time we go to the grocery store and every time an illegal murders an innocent American. So I won't be a Debbie Downer on that aspect of the polling, but yet again, I will caution Trump supporters from getting too cocky. Joe Biden is old and bad, and his record is atrocious, yet he is barely trailing Donald Trump, barely. This is concerning. So when they sub Joe out for Gavin, who is running quite an obvious shadow campaign, by the way, what is going to happen to those slight Trump leads? I worry, y'all. I just worry. And here's another thing I'm worried about. In all the fuss and fixation on Trump, our party has all but abandoned Republican candidates running for governor, running for Senate, for House, for state and local races that might not be as sexy, but are still crucial if we want to get anything done whatsoever to save this country. So instead of logging onto Twitter and bragging about the Trump teeny tiny lead in the polls, we need to get to work on registering voters, early voting, ballot harvesting where it's legal, and shining a light on some of the other Republicans running for things. Because the sad reality is our country is going to hell in a handbasket, and our rivals like China are carrying that handbasket and eating our lunch. And some of our very own politicians are helping them do it. Well, my next guest literally wrote the book on all of that, and he contends that the Chinese Communist Party is more deeply rooted and intertwined in the business of our country than we can even fathom. In his new, outstandingly popular book, Blood Money, Peter Schweizer details how the CCP has implanted itself into the drug trade, social justice movements, and the medical establishment to sow chaos and decadence in the United States. And Peter, I'm so excited, joins me now. First of all, congratulations on the book. Obviously a smash hit, like all of your books. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it's great to be on with you. Thanks so much for having me.
Before we get into Blood Money, and there's a lot I want to ask you about, I do have to ask you about the breaking news of the day, the Supreme Court decision 9-0. They can't kick Trump off the ballot in Colorado, likely can't kick him off the ballot in other states as well. In your estimation, what does this mean for the state of the race and the state of our republic?
Well, when was the last time we saw a Supreme Court decision that was 9-0? It's been a very, very long time. I think it shows the absurd lengths to which people are going to try to skew this election. And I think it's going to backfire. I've always said that, one of Donald Trump's great skills is to bring out the absolute worst in his political opponents. They overreach, they overgrab, and they are doing that now. And I think it's going to end up hurting them rather than helping them.
Do you think that if Donald Trump is in fact in a federal trial in the month or two leading up to the election in November, do you think that is going to debilitate him and prevent him from campaigning with, you know, as much as he would like to, or the full force of what he would be able to do otherwise?
Yeah, I mean, I think the trials are designed to do two things. Number one, distract and drain his time. You know, he's got to focus. He's got to be in trial. He's got to meet with his lawyers. That's time he can't be out messaging, campaigning, holding the kind of rallies that he holds. The second one is clearly financial. I mean, they're trying to bury him and they're trying to bury the RNC in massive amounts of legal bills. I think one of the estimates I saw is $50 million has been expended so far. And of course, the people that are suing him are using taxpayer dollars to do it. So it's not costing them a dime. They're using our money to do it. So this kind of lawfare is a really dangerous precedent for the future of our country. What it basically means now is, you know, if you've got a Democrat president and you don't like him, you just find a really, really red county in West Texas and you sue him on some sort of trumped up charge. I mean, that's kind of where this is headed. And I think that hopefully sanity is going to prevail and people are going to realize how damaging and destructive this approach really is.
It just feels like it never goes the other way. It feels like Republicans never give them a taste of their own medicine, quite frankly, because we have better things to do, like hopefully save our country, which is why I want to get to Blood Money. You know, the things that you detail in this book are shocking, or at least they should be shocking. Unfortunately, a lot of us don't find them as shocking as perhaps it should be. But the length that China is involved in everything, I mean, I think we've always looked at China as somewhat of a threat, but the detail that you go into in this book about just how involved they are and how strategically involved they are. I want to start off right away with one of the big topics that you write about, which is the white wolf and the drug trade. Tell my audience what they're going to read more about in Blood Money, but just kind of summarize for them what they need to be aware of as far as China is concerned with that.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the reporting on the fentanyl poisoning in the United States, it's now the leading cause of death among people under the age of 45 in our country. It's always put in the context of this is what the drug cartels are doing. The drug cartels are really the junior partners. This is a Chinese operation, from the precursors being shipped out of China to the laundering of the money. China is really in control, I would argue, in every single aspect of it. The question is why has this administration not called them out on this? Why do they not challenge China? The fact is fentanyl is killing 100,000 people a year in the United States. And the vast majority of people that are dying of fentanyl poisoning don't even know they're taking fentanyl. They think they're taking Vicodin or Adderall or something else. So it's an ingenious weapon. The reason that I think that Joe Biden will not call the Chinese out on this is because there is really one degree of separation from his family's finances and the actual drug trade itself. That seems like an astonishing thing to say, but here are the facts. the Chinese gang that set up the Sinaloa cartel. That's the cartel, cartel that is the king of fentanyl. The gang that set them up is called UBG, and the head of UBG is a guy named Zhang An Lo, who goes by the name White Wolf. These are the guys that helped create, generally created, the fentanyl crisis in America. White Wolf had a business partner. That business partner gave $5 million to the Biden family. It was a forgivable, no-interest loan given in 2017, and the Bidens, of course, have never repaid that loan. So the question is, does Joe Biden really want to have a conversation about China involvement in the fentanyl trade? Does he really want to, stand up for the Americans that are suffering these losses and these lost ones? No, I don't think he does, because it's deeply embarrassing to him. And it's just an example of why these financial entanglements that our leaders get involved in, that Joe Biden, particularly his family, gets involved in, are so dangerous. It actually affects their performance on the job.
Going along with that, I have to ask you what you thought of the Hunter Biden closed-door testimony last week, because it feels like, although there's so much evidence, I mean, evidence on evidence on evidence of this family's foreign entanglements and the involvement of likely Joe Biden himself, it just feels like as hard as Republicans try, they just cannot nail this down. It's like really like nailing Jell-O to a wall. Do you think that this impeachment inquiry and how it relates to Hunter Biden, his testimony, what's going to be maybe a public testimony coming up, do you think that this has been successful for Republicans? And if not, what are they doing wrong?
Good question. I think it's been successful. If you look at public opinion polls on this, everything from the Harvard Harris poll to the New York Times to the Wall Street Journal, when they asked voters, do you believe that Joe Biden engaged in illegal or highly unethical behavior to help his family make money? At least 65% of the American people in every single survey have said yes to that question. That's pretty astonishing, given that the mainstream media has not covered this story. So I think it's been a successful in getting general awareness of this issue out there. I think that the Republicans have made a mistake of trying to zero in on how much did Joe Biden get paid. Because if you look at the corruption and the bribery statutes in the United States, what the actual law says, whether Joe Biden got a penny or not is really irrelevant, because his family got paid. And the law says if your family is getting paid in exchange for public services or policies, that's every bit as much as if you got the money yourself. So I think the error that they've made is fixating and focusing so much on the money that Joe Biden got. What we know already, which has been confirmed by bank records, is they've received tens of millions of dollars from China alone. And what was interesting about Hunter Biden's testimony, if you go through the transcript, he still can't explain what he was doing right for that money. That's the most absurd part to me, is somebody is sending you tens of millions of dollars and you can't even come up with a plausible explanation of why they're paying you the money. So I think it was a disaster for him. And I think that public opinion is actually ahead of Washington, D.C. on this issue.
I hope you're right about that. Unfortunately, it seemed like he was able to dodge a lot of questions by saying he was drunk or high. So yeah. I'm worried about that. And, you know, that text message, I'm here with my father. He said, oh, if I did send that, it's so embarrassing, but I was probably drunk or high and it was a lie. So unfortunately, he's been able to use that excuse a lot. I want to turn to other people that are making money in places they shouldn't be making money. And that brings me to what I actually believe is going to be the Democrat nominee. And that's Gavin Newsom in California. Adam Schiff in California, not going to be the president, hopefully won't be a senator. But let's talk about Gavin and Schiff a little bit and some of their ties to the Chinese Communist Party. I'm sure they don't want this out there.
Yeah, I mean, again, both of these individuals have been completely silent on China's role in fentanyl, even though between 2016 and today, fentanyl deaths in California are up 1,200%. But they don't want to talk about this. Gavin Newsom took a trip to China not too long ago. He said he raised the issue of fentanyl with the Chinese, but there was no, quote, finger pointing, as if, you know, we shouldn't even question them on this. I can't go into detail in the book. I lay out how China controls every aspect of the fentanyl trade in the United States, the creation of the fentanyl, the distribution of it. But China is the senior partner here. So why does Gavin Newsom not want to talk about this? Why does he say no finger pointing? And the answer is simple. If you look at his public career, going back to when he was mayor of San Francisco to the present time, he has weirdly been surrounded and has surrounded himself by individuals with ties to Chinese organized crime. As mayor of San Francisco, he appointed a gentleman to be the head of economic development in the state, in the city of San Francisco. That gentleman ended up being a dragon head, which is a mafia leader of Chinese organized crime. He befriended a guy that went by the name of Shrimp Boy. He actually had the city of San Francisco donate money to a nonprofit that was being run by Shrimp Boy. They had pictures taken together. Problem is that Shrimp Boy was also a dragon head in Chinese organized crime. There was a third individual named Keith Jackson, who was also involved with Chinese organized crime, that was part of his transition team. Democrats said that this individual was a permanent fixture in City Hall when Gavin Newsom was running the city. And all of these Chinese organized crime networks are involved in the drug trade. Then you look at a decision he made as mayor of San Francisco. He wanted to create an initiative to bring Chinese investment dollars into San Francisco from China. So he launched an organization called China SF. He was one of the co-signatories. He picked a partner in China. The person that he picked, of all the people that were available in China that he could partner with, he picked a guy named Vincent Lowe, who, guess what, was already widely reported to have ties to Chinese organized crime. And yet this is the guy that Gavin Newsom partnered with. And this initiative called China SF started bringing Chinese companies into the Bay Area. The problem is that many of them had ties to Chinese organized crime. So, I mean, I could go on and on and on Gavin Newsom to his tenure as governor, but the bottom line is he does not want to have a conversation about Chinese criminal networks involved in the fentanyl trade. He doesn't want to talk about China's involvement because he has this long history going back more than a decade to the very people that are engaged in these kinds of activities.
A lot of California politicians seem to be having this issue. Dianne Feinstein, Eric Swalwell, Schiff. I mean, the list really goes on and on here. I want to ask you, too, just as it relates to California. In recent weeks, they've seen hundreds of people from China crossing our border illegally into California. You know, to me, that's highly suspicious. The numbers are astounding. What do you make of that? And is that kind of a strategic move on behalf of China to get those people into our country?
Oh, absolutely. No question about it. In blood money, there are two things that are directly related to that. Number one, there was a case involving the Houston consulate, the Chinese consulate in Houston, Texas, where Chinese officials that had come into the United States were involved in efforts to try to foment social unrest in 2020. They were trying to encourage more BLM protests, more Antifa type actions. That's one example of the sort of nefarious activities that Chinese nationals coming into the United States can engage in. The other one is more covert, but I would argue even more dangerous. And that is that our country has a massive problem with illegal marijuana growths taking place from California to the state of Maine. This is marijuana. This is not the 1990s marijuana that people smoked in college. This is very highly potent. It's often laced with fentanyl. Well, these illegal growths are overwhelmingly being carried out by Chinese nationals who are illegally in the country. Wow. In the state of Maine alone, there are 300 known illegal marijuana growths being carried out by Chinese organized crime with illegal Chinese nationals in the country. It's happening in Oklahoma, Washington State, California. So absolutely, this is a massive national security problem.
So you think these individuals are coming across our border to either work on these marijuana grows or they're already a part of it? You think that that's likely that that's why they're coming over in the numbers we're seeing as of recently?
Yeah, I mean, the quantities are enormous. The sheriff of San Bernardino County says that more than 96% of the illegal marijuana grows that are taking place in California are being carried out by Chinese nationals that are not legally supposed to be in the country. So is every single one of them doing that? Probably not, but I would say a sizable portion of them are. We also have the problem of Chinese organized crime networks in the United States. We've seen this with Venezuelans crossing the border illegally into Mexico, joining Venezuelan gangs. We have a problem with Chinese gang activity in the United States. Many of those gangs operating in the United States have headquarters back in mainland China, in Fujian province. And of course, Fujian province is the province where President Xi cut his teeth. He knows these individuals. He worked with these individuals when he was a political figure there. So Chinese organized crime networks with illegals coming into the country is part of the CCP play here. It has been for quite some time. I'm just thankful that we're now starting to wake up and pay attention to it.
Oh, I hope so. I mean, your book has done a lot to wake people up. I want to talk about something else that China has been getting away with for the last several years, and that's COVID. I don't think we're ever going to get a reckoning on 3 years of hell and misery that we were put through, not only by China and the China virus itself, but by our leaders who shut down our economy, who infringed upon our freedoms. And then you've got Fauci at the top of that. He's been kind of able to get off scot-free with all of this as well. I know in your book, you talk about Fauci, you talk about China, you talk about the coddling and the cover-up there. What do the American people need to know about this time in history we will likely never get an apology for?
Yeah, I mean, China not only, I think, had this probably this lab leak. It could have been released intentionally, but let's assume it's a lab leak. But they carried out a whole bunch of policies that were designed to maximize the body count in the United States. And I lay those out in the book. The problem is that Tony Fauci was aware of these things and he covered it up. There are numerous emails from him that I quote where he's telling people we can't talk about China's role in this. We don't want to have our Chinese colleagues called out on this. He was much more concerned, I would argue, about criticism of China than he was actually of what was happening to American casualties in this country. And the other thing we have to understand, it wasn't just about Americans dying. Part of what China was trying to accomplish with COVID, and I would argue was successfully doing, was to try to impose their model on us, the kind of top-down social model of control. They were successful in states like California and New Jersey and New York in doing so. They manipulated us into that. Just one small example, when COVID started happening in the United States and California said, you know, Gavin Newsom said, we need lockdowns, China donated a couple of hundred drones to law enforcement in the United States so we could better monitor our population to make sure they were abiding by these lockdowns. I mean, that sounds pretty Orwellian. And law enforcement in California used them. They would fly these drones around with loudspeakers. And if people were out walking or something, the loudspeakers would say, you know, you're violating the curfew. Please go back to your home. That was an enormous political victory to China and part of their ideological goal to move America closer to the Chinese model of governance. And I would say during COVID, they were partly successful in doing that.
Yeah, all too successful. I think there was also another deal where Gavin spent $1 billion on masks from China. We're never going to get to the bottom of that one either. He never had to answer for that. But also, what a stupid time in American history. As COVID was ruining our lives, infringing upon our freedoms, a lot of young people turned to a wonderful tool, TikTok, to express their creativity and their idiocy, if you will. But TikTok is a way that China has been manipulating our country and, most importantly, manipulating our young people. How concerned are you with TikTok and what it's been able to do to this generation?
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, we're having this debate in this country. Is TikTok a threat? Is it not a threat? What we did is we got access to Chinese military and documents and also documents from the Chinese propaganda ministry. And they're not having this debate in China. They absolutely see it and recognize it and use it as a tool of indoctrination in the United States. There's a Chinese military official we quote who says this is a Trojan horse that we can use against the West, that we are using against the West. And they talk about ways in which you engage in propaganda that's subtle. You know, this is not propaganda where you have the red army marching, through Tiananmen Square with glorious music playing. This is about subverting the cultural norms and values of people. One of the things they talk about is getting people to reject their history and their historical symbols. You know, all this toppling over of statues and attacking national symbols. TikTok is at the center of that, and the CCP sees that as a way that once you get people to reject their history, they are now open to new ideas, by which they mean their ideas. They're very optimistic that TikTok is going to allow them to win what they call a cognitive war against the United States. So I would say anybody concerned about TikTok, just read the chapters in the book and look at the extensive quotes from the Chinese themselves. They love TikTok. They think it's a potent weapon. They are using it against us. And, the reason we have political leaders who are not acting on this, both Republicans and Democrats, unfortunately, is precisely because there are some American investors that have huge investments in ByteDance, which is the parent company to TikTok. And if TikTok were banned or were something to change, they would lose a lot of money. So they are exerting pressure on Joe Biden. And they are also trying to exert pressure on Republicans in the Senate to get them to prevent any action being taken.
Yeah, I'm not all for government intervention when it comes to social media platforms. So it's a difficult one. I personally hate TikTok, but it's a fine line that we walk between what is free speech. But I think just educating people, especially young people, on what they're seeing on TikTok and what they're seeing on social media in general. I mean, the propaganda is alive. It is well, whether you're looking for it or not. I certainly am not looking up things about, the plight of the Palestinians, but that's still on my Instagram feed. And that's not something I look for, but it's there. And the undertones are there. Where is the best place for my audience to go and buy Blood Money so they can read all about this and be in the know about all the things that you're warning about?
It should be available everywhere. We've been number one on Amazon, all of Amazon, for most of the week. You can find it at Costco, Books a Million. You should be able to find it anywhere. And you can go to peterschweitzer.com. You can leave a comment. Would love to hear people's thoughts on it, what they found most compelling, what they think we need to do more research on. We try to be very responsive with readers that way.
Well, I thank you. And my dad is one of those who recently purchased your book, and he's very excited about it. So he's very excited that you're on with me. And it's such an honor to have you. Thank you for all that you do to inform the public and all of your great work. I really appreciate you being here, and I hope to talk to you soon.
Oh, great questions, great conversation. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks so much, Peter. Florida is where woke goes to die as Governor Ron DeSantis scores yet another victory for common sense in the Sunshine State. It's time for final thoughts. Leftists have gone out of their way to rebrand racism and discrimination as progressive. Their new favorite way to do this is through DEI, or Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion programs. It sounds good, though, right? Well, in reality, it's just a way for organizations, institutions, and corporations to make everything about race and climbing the oppression totem pole. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, he had enough. At the start of the year, the Florida Board of Governors passed a regulation to limit public funding of DEI programs, and now those chickens are coming home to roost, and it's beautiful. Last week, the University of Florida eliminated all employees holding DEI-specific positions. Those employees are reported 13 full-time in DEI positions, and 15 involved in administrative appointments were cut and encouraged to apply elsewhere in the institution. $5 million wasted on DEI BS will now be redirected into a faculty recruitment fund. Governor DeSantis celebrated this necessary step, saying, "Florida is where DEI goes to die." And he's right. He's also one of the only elected Republicans in office today that does what he says he will do and does it regardless of what the crybabies in the media peanut gallery have to say about it. While other Republican leaders are more worried about their follower counts on social media or TV FaceTime, Governor Ron DeSantis is in the trenches bodying woke crap and embodying what it means to be a conservative. Ron DeSantis is the future of this party and our movement. May we never be dumb enough to forget that or squander it away again. Those are my final thoughts from Nashville. God bless and take care.